Strangers and North in Germany. And there is 6 million people in Germany.
Yes.
Well, that's a great
answer. Great answer.
What is a wrong answer? Wrong answer.
So people watching have relatives in Las Vegas. They know people die. So what you are saying feels like an attack on them personally.
No, you're putting my
What does this have to do with
Lies. So maybe people can't see the lie in what's going on with COVID-19. But there are many books and many experts took apart gastro story 101 different ways.
What are the rest of you guys think of this?
There's always big difference between people, normal, straight, so we should not judge people based on what they say or they don't say.
Joanne is welcome.
Absolutely.
All of these alternative communities are brought together by one thing. They're against the COVID vaccine mandates.
Yeah. So it's very, very scary. And this is why I agree increasingly with the conspiracy cult that we talked about.
Maybe they believe flat earth stuff, or they just don't want the vaccine because they've grabbed the oxide and it'll link you up to a cloud or whatever.
But there's really ugly stuff underlying it, exactly as you saw there. Unfortunately, that is not going to be someone you can talk sense into. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID.
Here's a question about being at restaurants.
I don't want to. My preference would be restaurants, places inclusive of the full salary of people that are working there.
You don't worry about tipping. Increasingly happening, lots of places in New York City are starting to do that. The tipping culture is not only using people, traveling countries, where the policy or expectations are different, it's also a way for restaurants to get out of paying employees properly. I'm against tip, but I tip 20% good service myself because I know that it's not the fault of the restaurant employees. I would like to get rid of it and have it as much cleaner.
Don't tip. Prices already account for properly paying our staff.
That's all you got to do. That would be my preference.
We have a great bonus show for you today.
Sign up and join Pacman.com to get the active access.
We will see you on the bonus show today.
Would you like sounds of your favorite radio station to play that you never thought possible?
Well, now you can.
Because WRCT is live on the internet.
Just point your browser to www.wrct.org
and click on our live MP3 broadcast.
Now you can go out of town with any feeling, loss, or regret, or even behind.
Because we're just a mouse click away.
WRCT live on the internet.
Because why should people have all the fun?
Pose fame, think I'm hot. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel reinforced concrete basement.
By gathering intelligence to help protect Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. On Tuesday, Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov said the West Army Ukraine is jeopardizing negotiations and ending fighting. He accused NATO of waging a proxy war in Ukraine, saying it could lead to World War III.
Of course, one of the alleged targets of the Russian military acting on the contact special operations and the storage facilities, including those in Western Ukraine, have been targeted once by Russian forces.
How can it be otherwise?
If NATO is engaged in war with Russia via proxy and is arming
Russia, war means war.
Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov also warned about the risk of a nuclear war.
The risks are really considerable, not one of the risks officially. Many would like that the danger is serious, real, and we must not underestimate it.
The U.S. announced Lavrov's comments about nuclear war as the height of irresponsibility. On Tuesday, U.N. Secretary-General Antonio Guterres met with Lavrov and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. During their meeting, agreed in principle to allow the UN and the International Committee of the Red Cross to help evacuate civilians from the besieged steel plant in Mariupol. Guterres meeting Zelensky in Kiev, speak Professor Alcoy about the war in Ukraine, latest peace, is how to end the war in Ukraine, solution beyond sanctions. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency visited the nuclear power station in Ukraine on Monday on the 36th anniversary of the plant's meltdown. Rafael Grossi vowed to help Ukraine repair damage caused when Russian forces seized the facility in February. He praised workers at the plant for helping to prevent what could have been another nuclear disaster.
In this case, what we had was a nuclear safety situation that was not normal. That could have developed into an accident. I think the first priority goes to these people here because they carried on their work in spite of all the difficulties, in spite of the stress, in spite of the fact that they were not working normally. They continued working, nothing happened. So they kept the situation stable, so to speak.
Russia and the United States have participated in a prisoner swap. Russia has released Marine veteran Trevor Reed in exchange for a pilot jailed in Connecticut on drug charges. Reed had jailed Russia since 2019. Russia is continuing to hold NBA player Brittany Griner, who was arrested in February after authorities say they found cartridges containing cannabis oil in her luggage airport near Moscow. Vice President Kamala Harris has tested positive for COVID-19, according to her office, not showing any symptoms due to a regular travel schedule. She has not recently been in close contact with President Biden. Vice comes with a new research suggesting more than 60% of adults and 75% of children in the United States have been infected with COVID at some point during the pandemic. That's a far higher than the official number of confirmed cases. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization warning cuts to COVID testing are making it harder for public health officials to track the pandemic. WHO Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus spoke Tuesday in Geneva.
As many countries reduce testing, WHO is receiving less information about transmission and sequencing. This makes us increasingly blind to patterns of transmission and evolution. But this virus, just countries stop looking for it. It's still spreading, it's still changing, and it's still killing.
The New York Times published new audio of House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy saying members of the Majority Party were putting people in jeopardy by using dangerous rhetoric following the deadly January 6th insurrection. This reporting is from January 10th, 2021.
Some of the other places, there is serious about doing a bit, but that's not stopped.
as well as Republican Congressmember Steve Scalise on a call with other Republican lawmakers January 10, 2021. McCarthy later defended the same lawmakers he privately criticized. Tensions continuing to escalate on the Solomon Islands after the Pacific Island nation signed a security deal with China. On Tuesday, high-ranking U.S. diplomat refused to rule out the U.S. military action against the Solomon Islands if China established a military presence on the islands. During a news briefing, the State Department official, Daniel Crittenbrink, said the U.S. respects Solomon Islands' sovereignty, but warned against China's presence in the region, saying the United States would, quote, respond to those concerns, quote, by sound count, the U.S. operates over 800 military bases around the world. China moved its first overseas base just four years ago in the African nation of Djibouti. In Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi has been sentenced to nine years in prison and closed military court for guilty on corruption charges. Suu Kyi was overthrown alongside civilian leaders in a deadly military coup in February 2021. At least one migrant is dead. At least 24 others missing after the boat capsized on 135 miles from Spain's Canary Islands. The Spanish Coast Guard has reported 36 people so far. This comes days after at least 20 migrants died after a group of boats sank off the coast of Indonesia. Israel carried out deadly airstrikes in Syria, targeting several locations near Damascus. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported nine people died, including five Syrian soldiers. Israeli forces killed an 18-year-old Palestinian after Israel conducted an armed raid near Jenin in the occupied West Bank. Three other Palestinians, including a 16-year-old, were shot. On Tuesday, hundreds of Palestinians gathered at the funeral. A 21-year-old Palestinian man was shot by Israeli during a raid on a refugee camp. In news from Colombia, the nation's human rights ambassador revealed at least 52 Colombian human rights activists were killed in the first three months of the year, marking a significant increase over last year. The victims include 28 landers and 9 indigenous activists. Meanwhere, retired members of the Islamic Military have publicly admitted to assassinating more than 100 civilians about 15 years ago, covering up their deaths by falsely portraying their victims as militants killed in combat. So-called positives. Those soldiers admitted to their role in the deaths and appearances during a tribunal organized by the Colombian Transitional Justice Tribunal. A special jurisdiction for peace, a former Colombian army official.
We made it to the show that goes in combat because of pressure from high command. I executed the people who were here, taking lives, shooting them, murdering them cruelly, killing them, and guiding down combat that they were guerrilla.
Tuesday, 9 Jay Day, Jay Day is Colombia's special jurisdiction for peace revealed nearly 6,000 people were killed by paramilitary over a 20-year period as military military campaign against the left-wing Patriotic Union Party. President Biden, five members of the Congressional Congress 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 Cong
authority he has to bring relief to people who have student loans.
President Biden's three people committed the sentence of 75 violent drug offenders. One of the four was 86-year-old Abraham Bolden, Sr., who was the first black service agent to serve on a presidential detail. Bolden was jailed on federal bribery charges in the 1960s, but his long claim was framed against racism within the service. And Harvard University pledged to spend $100 million fund to redress school ties to slavery. On Tuesday, the school issued a 130-page report that revealed at least 40 prominent people connected to the school owned by enslaved people. This includes four former presidents of Harvard. The report states enslaved men and women served Harvard presidents as professors and fed and cared for Harvard students. Moreover, throughout this period and well into the 19th century, the university university and its donors benefited from extensive financial ties to slavery. And those are some of the headlines.
This is Democracy Now!, Democracy.org, the Warren Peace Report.
I'm Amy Goodman, New York, joined by Democracy Now! Colin Gonzalez in New Jersey, Taiwan.
Hi, welcome to our listeners across the country and around the world.
Well, we begin our show with news you've been closely following. Today's Capitol Hill Puerto Rico Domination Act, Puerto Rico elected officials from both the Bahai Island and the United States mainland gathering in Washington, D.C. to press passage. The bill is co-sponsored by Democratic Mayor Congressman Amelia Velasquez, a Puerto Rican woman to serve in the U.S. House, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whose mother was born in Puerto Rico. This comes after the Supreme Court ruled Thursday the federal government can continue to deny benefits to seniors and people with disabilities who live in Puerto Rico. In an ruling decided by the Biden administration, which says Puerto Ricans are not entitled to claim full Supplemental Security Income, unless they move to the mainland. AOC tweeted the ruling, quote, 2022 imperialist colony vibe. When my cousins drafted into war by a government they don't even have a right to vote for and deny them benefits, yet the same government can exploit their land into a tax haven for crypto billionaires and tax evaders. Puerto Rico is not for sale. She texted and tweeted. The lone dissenter in the court's 8-1 ruling was Justice Sonia Sotomayor, whose parents were born in Puerto Rico. In her dissenting opinion, she wrote, quote, There's no rational basis for concrete needy cities living anywhere in the United States differently from others. So, Juan Gonzalez, this is a story that you have spent extensive time following. What is important to understand in this Supreme Court decision?
Well, she did her research in college, both at Princeton and Yale, and the relationship with the people in the United States. This is a topic she has studied here, and once she finds herself as a dissenting voice in the Supreme Court. But to me, I think there are more significant developments in the case, and one of the most important coverage in the last few days was that there was a separate concurring opinion issued by one of the most served justices, Neil Gorsuch. His campaign, and I encourage you to read it, is one of the clearest and most eloquent statements exposing U.S. colonialism that's ever been issued by a Supreme Court judge, at least in my lifetime, and could be the signal of beginning of a long change in the court. But to understand the importance of what's said, I want to quote something in a minute or so, but we need to understand the bigger picture.
We now have had four Supreme Court decisions in less than six years.
All of them having to do with the relationship to the United States. Back in 2016, we had Sanchez Baez case, which was an issue where Puerto Rico had sovereignty to be able to try, but the court said no. Then we had a few weeks later the Franklin tax trust case on whether the people could clear as bankruptcy because it had no bankruptcy protection under U.S. law. The court said no, then the Supreme Court, the Congress established, the federal officials, the illegal employment board, the United States law, the Puerto Rico Office, the Puerto Rico Office, once again sided against Puerto Rico.
And now we have a Madero case where a man who's been receiving SSI benefits for years in this country.
And paying taxes on this, moves to Puerto Rico.
And then years later, the government finds out that he still was collecting SSI then.
And
and he says he's not eligible for federal benefits and that he got paid back $28,000 on the basis of this latest case.
All of the cases take from the power of Congress to do whatever it wants when it comes to the people and governed by the territorial laws of the Constitution as the court interpreted more than 100 years ago.
In a series of cases known as the insular case. There were cases like Downs versus Wells, Lima versus Wells, Boyle versus United States, Gonzalez versus Lombard, Bowles versus Wells, Bowles versus Wells, all in the early decades of the 20th century. Let's be clear, the insular cases have been for centuries the legal underpinning of American colonialism. They provide legal justification for the United States to hold other nationalities and territory under its control. What is Gorsuch?
Who is one of the Supreme Justices say about this?
And his opinion is astonishing that he calls to completely overthrow the insular cases.
Let me quote you what he says.
He starts out in his opinion saying,
a century ago in the insular cases,
this court held federal government rule in other territories largely out to the Constitution.
It is past time to acknowledge the gravity of this error and admit no true truth.
The insular cases have no foundation in the Constitution and rest on racial stereotypes.
They deserve no place in our law.
Now, just don't talk of this clearly very often.
He goes on to say that in the Downs case, the two main justices, Brown and White, their opinions on both rests on a view of a nation's right to acquire and exploit an unknown island people with an unsubstantiated reason, a right that could not be practically exercised, as the result would be downfall to constitutional protection, and also absolutely unwritten to receive them.
And it was just White who developed this idea of unincorporated territory.
Some territory never meant to be part of the United States, including the Philippines and some of the other islands acquired back in the Spanish-American War.
Of course, the flaws in the insular cases are as fundamental as they are shameful.
Nothing in the Constitution speaks of incorporated territories.
Nothing extends to the latter.
Only certainly supposedly fundamental constitutional guarantees.
And he goes on to say that the insular cases are a product of a period of racial stereotypes.
And the theories of social Darwin,
they have no home in our Constitution.
Understand that Gorsuch, as an originalist, looks at the Constitution and says all of this justification for colonialism did not exist in the original Constitution, it was made up after it needs to be overthrown.
And he goes on to say, under this court's case, we are asked to believe that the right to trial by jury remains insufficiently fundamental to apply to 3 million U.S. citizens in Puerto Rico.
At the same time, the full panoply of constitutional rights of the Pacific Ocean, because it represents our nation's only remaining territory.
It is an implausible and embarrassing state of affairs.
And he says that the only reason he voted for the majority in this case was that no one asked him to overthrow the insular case.
Not even the other side.
But then he ends his opinion by saying the time has come to recognize that the insular cases rest on a round foundation.
And I hope the day comes soon when the court squarely overrules them.
We should follow Charlotte and settle this question, right, fellow American Puerto Rico deserve no less.
Now, Justice Sotomayor, in her dissent, also backs Gorsuch.
So we now have two justices who have clearly said the insular case, the foundation of American colonialism, needs to be overthrown.
I think that is a major step in court, and hopefully some of the other originalists, one of the problems with Puerto Rico is that many of them are liberal justices. Justice Breyer, Justice Ginsburg was alive. Justice Kagan have been terrible on this. They have not really dared to challenge the answer of the case. So make necessary a whole new alliance of progressive justices and more progressive justice to begin to find legal basis for a long list. But I think this is definitely a step forward. And Justice Gorsuch's opinion needs to be studied more carefully.
And how does that relate to what's happening today on Capitol Hill? The lobbying on the Trump campaign, the Senate, is also called sponsoring it to basically allow the Republican Convention to dissolve the Republican Convention, to decide its relationship with the Republican Party, and so it is not that we necessarily support foreign congress, okay, we're not going to change the dictate what our relationship with the Republican Party, but understand. The imposition of the Control Board in 2016 ended any claim the United States has given the world over the last 16 years that Puerto Rico has self-governed. Puerto Rico now is ruled by a U.S. appointed control board effectively. And so it's back to the classic colonial stage. So the issue of how is that going to end? What's going to happen when the control board is lifted finally? What will be the relationship with the United States still needs to be resolved. And this is the Puerto Rico termination action is definitely a step in that direction.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Gonzalez, Democrat, Democratic Co-host, Winning Journalist, Investigator, and Journalist Professor at Rutgers University. When we come back, Juan and I will continue to look at the Supreme Court hearings Tuesday, a case of enormous impact on seeker refuge in the United States. Stay with us. Immigrant rally outside the U.S. Supreme Court Tuesday morning, just oral arguments on the case involving the Trump era remain in Mexico policy. Sky, it's about the things we have to leave when we have to leave home. This is Democracy Now! We look now at another U.S. Supreme Court case when an enormous impact on asylum seekers come to the United States and search for refuge. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court Justice's oral argument, the Biden administration appealed to a lower court ruling that reinstated the Trump era remain in Mexico policy, formerly known as the so-called Migrant Protection Program, Closer NPP. Between January 2019
January 2021, some 70,000 non-Mexican secrets were forced to wait in extremely dangerous conditions while their cases were resolved in the U.S. across the process, taking months or even years. President Biden, then taking office shortly after taking office in the federal court in Texas last year, ordered the administration's lease program after legal challenges from Texas and Missouri. During Tuesday's Supreme Court hearing, Texas Solicitor General Jones tried to argue the Biden administration might re-implement in Mexico, saying the U.S. government's required to jail every asylum seeker at the southern border or return them to Mexico, does not have the capacity to detain everyone.
MPP has implemented the number of violations, not to fully satisfy executive mandate, and so far as it went, it complied with these obligations to return rather than detain the aliens enrolled in MPP.
One question, don't admit, even President Trump failed to detain everyone at the U.S.-Mexico border, even with Remain in Mexico in place. Meanwhile, Biden's lawyer, Solicitor General Elizabeth Guilogar, argued remain in Mexico was halted because the humanitarian and foreign policy that weighed any public benefit, sending tens of thousands of people to Mexico to await their hearing. Justice Kavanaugh questioned her on what the administration meant by public benefit.
There's no real explanation of what is benefited by more people coming to the United States who are not lawfully admitted in the United States rather than trying to be feasible for some of those people remaining in Mexico.
During the oral arguments, Solicitor General Jones found the remain in Mexico policy would not require the U.S. to negotiate with Mexico to accept asylum seekers. Justice Elena Kagan directed him.
What are we supposed to do? Drive clubs of people into Mexico, leave them without being located in Mexico?
In fact, the United States does make the Mexican government send asylum seekers there under MPP. Ahead of the hearing, dozens of justice advocates, lawyers, and supporters held a rally outside the U.S. Supreme Court. Several survivors of the Remain in Mexico program shared their experience. This is Ravers Rodriguez.
I was born in Mexico for about 4 years, about 10 months in Mexico. I was not easy, but I was not easy. 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 I was not remaining dangerous in Mexico while waiting for the asylum claims. Happy people stand now.
Well, from what we're trying to watch, Washington D.C. by Aaron Rowland, Melnick, Senior Policy Council, the Supreme Court, and the oral argument today, Aaron lay out the center of the Supreme Court hearing, and when we can expect a ruling.
Yesterday's Supreme Court hearing was largely about whether Biden's administration has the authority to end the remaining program at all. This is very different than the docket years ago where the Trump administration unsuccessfully tried to end the program. In that case, everyone agreed that the Trump administration could end the program if it went right protocol doing so. But here, Texas has gone even further. They actually got a court order saying not only did the Biden administration go about the way in ending the program. They actually can't end it legally, have it in place permanently for the rest of history until Congress either gets enough funding to the agency to do something that's never been able to, which is to detain every person brought under order, or if Congress got the entire statutory authority for the program in the first place. This is an outrageous idea that the new president coming into office is not allowed to dismantle his predecessor's program that he disagrees with, and that is largely what was at stake yesterday. Importantly, the case that we heard yesterday was not about whether the remaining in Mexico was legal, even whether the program was a good idea. It's
solely about whether or not the new president has already ever and predecessor programs. And if the Supreme Court says yes, what that means is that the case is likely going to go back to a lower court for months more wrangling. We can expect a decision just because this case is being very, very late in the term, and it will probably be one of the last cases we get out of the Supreme Court, or they go on recess this summer.
And it's hard to tell how the justices were aligning on this case.
I think the justices were torn. For the question on Solicitor General Gailagher, there was a lot of concern from the justices about what it means for the government to admit it can't do what Congress asked it to do. Since 1993, Congress has told the government they are required to detain certain individuals. But for that century, there hasn't been enough money given for that possible. So the government has, over a century, released some individuals because there isn't enough detention capacity. Several conservative justices are very concerned by suggesting that they would endorse a program that gives potentially fewer people being in detention centers. On the other hand, the conservative justices are also very concerned about what it would mean to say that every presidential administration since 1996 has been violating law without any notice, as Texas was arguing. And even Justice Thomas, according to the court's conservative members, suggested that this idea that it was illegal to end the NPP program was ridiculous because even the Trump administration had violated the law. Justice Roberts, in fact, is saying, how does any sense what you're asking a simple judge in Texas simply order the government to start violating the law only slightly less rather than ordering them to not violate at all? Which suggests that Texas is illegal.
I want to go to the testimony for an LGBTQ asylum seeker placed in the main program. They've been forced to wait in the border city of Matamoros two and a half years.
Just the other day, I slept by the river under some tent. I saw how those are murderers, people of that sort. They would just call it Yamanya. They would go and find children to rape them, children. I saw people dying. When you don't pay a so-called rent, what happens is they pour acid on you. And so if I'm escaping a country where I kill, and then they send me to another country where I will also kill for any reason. They're not helping us.
We felt it was critical because so often in cases, the humanity, the voices of the people who are affected by the policy. As we wrap up, can you describe how and you work with people waiting in Mexico and facing violence, and when there's a U.S. court hearing, come over the border again?
That's right, in fact, under the first version of NPP, there were some people who were forced to wait years just to get a court hearing. And we know that when people are in extreme risk and violence, there are some people who literally had to run on the law, kidnapped just to get to the border for a court hearing. We know there are many people, potentially hundreds, who were ordered to miss a court hearing because they were in the hands of kidnappers and being ransomed at the time of the court hearing. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court didn't get into any humanity program that was very urgent here, multiple conservative justices suggesting that the program was good because it was reducing the number of people allowed to seek asylum inside the United States. But we know the remaining program was sham. Less than 1% of people put into the program were forced to have their cases heard at the border ever compared to 15 to 20% of asylum inside the United States. Only 7% ever managed to get a lawyer. Because it's basically impossible to get a lawyer when you're stuck in a refugee in northern Mexico, constantly being harassed by the cartels, and worried to turn around around the corner at night, or even during the day, somebody's going to pick you up, kidnap you, and extort you for ransom. Extort you and your family for ransom. And the Biden administration's new Mexico program, while it does, slightly better exempt certain vulnerable individuals, still puts people into that basic problem. They are in northern Mexico, away from the lawyers, away from the legal assistance, and away from any ability to have their case while they're safe. No person should be forced to go through the most important interview and experience of their life. While they're constantly over their shoulder and worrying that they're going to be picked up by our cartel, tortured, and killed.
Aaron Miller will certainly continue to cover these decisions expected in June. Senior Policy Counsel, American Immigration Council. Next up, how to end the war in Ukraine. A solution beyond sanctions. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, the Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman of Solid Solace. As Russia's invasion of Ukraine enters its third month, look at how it could end. In a sign of escalating tension, Russian Gazprom has cut off natural gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria, saying both countries refuse to begin paying in rubles. The president of Europe commissioned Russia to use gas as an instrument of blackmail. This is Germany announcing they will begin exporting dozens of armored anti-aircraft vehicles to Ukraine in a March shift. And U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin vowed allied nations will also do more to help arm Ukraine. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary General Antonio Guterres met Tuesday with Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow, who agreed in principle to allow the UN and the International Committee of the Red Cross to help evacuate civilians from the steel plant in Mariupol. Guterres is meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky in Kyiv today. For more, we're joined by Alcoy, history professor at University of Wisconsin-Madison, numerous questions to govern the world, global orders, and status change. His new piece for Tom Dispatch headlined, How Can the War in Ukraine Solution Beyond Sanctions? Professor, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you start off by laying out your solution?
Under the whole rubric, the whole artifice, the whole attempt at ending conflict with Russian law enforcement.
there simply has been no real way of enforcing the judgments of superpowers like Russia. So, but there is a very simple civil solution winding of the obvious and simple. Russia has massive pipeline volume of trillions of dollars running through Ukraine and underneath the ocean North one that provides about 40% natural gas for Europe. This generates about $800 a day revenues for the Russian state gas processing. Gas arm is a Russian state agency. It's an instrument of the Russian state. And so what the European rights do is simply damage it, say that you have to divide our assist from damaging the very structure. Just like the United States garnishes wages for a dead dad, the European rights, in fact, Vladimir Putin's ultimate dead dad. And simply order that all European nations importing gas from Russia, when they pay their regular payment of gas at Gazprom, deduct the diet, say, 20%, right, to start. From those payments and into a reparations fund for the reconstruction of Ukraine. In the first month of the war, it's estimated that there was $68 billion of damage in the Ukraine's civil infrastructure, and a total of about $600 billion a day. Rising very fast and continues. And so, with those deductions. The garnishment of the gas pump could actually fund the reconstruction of Ukraine. Now, the question is, what would Russia do? If they would order to deduct 20% of their reserves from gas. My feeling is that Vladimir would probably eliminate and threaten to cut off gas. But faced with the loss of all of those revenues, which are absolutely critical,
Massive damage to the European economy, from an immediate suspension embargo on
line of gas and shit, and you were going to cut off the gas completely. It would send Germany under recession, and particularly Germany under recession. And finally, avoiding environmental damage might occur. Germany was to fire up abandoned coal-fired electricity plants. So, in effect, blindingly, simple solution. And beyond this,
Professor McCoy, I'd like to ask you, between the two parties, and also the United States, what the potential global bad of the United States authority to make these kinds of decisions in terms of what the United States has been involved in the past.
Russian communist countries, and the Chinese, and the Indian, and the South African, and the Indian, and the South African, and the Indian, and the South African, 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 and
is over there discussing cutting off the tubes of Russian oil. Oil is maneuverable. Right now, oil from Russia to Europe via oil pipelines, that will readily load under anchors and ship anywhere in the world. The beauty of taking 20% natural gas payments is that Russia has invested millions of dollars in laying down absolute massive gas pipelines, many of which run through Ukraine. They're not moving. These natural gas reserves are not made in ocean going freight. They come to the gas pipeline. And those pipelines can't be dumped and moved. So Russia is stuck. It's laid down this massive multi-billion dollar infrastructure. Between Russia and Europe to provide 40% of natural gas supplies. And so Russia's stuck initially. Everybody thought that Europe is stuck. I think Putin was calculating that Europe is dependent on their natural gas supplies. Therefore, they can't do what they're doing, ship shipping arms and sanctions on Russia. On Russia. Okay. In fact, that one's power. It can be reversed by this kind of position of Russian reparations. So that Europe can take advantage of that massive gas pipeline infrastructure to punish Putin for its invasion and simultaneously fund the reconstruction of Ukraine.
Professor, I wanted to bring in what Vladimir Putin said a few weeks ago, that Russian energy exports should be rerouted to Africa and Latin America. This is what he said.
We need to speed up the execution of infrastructure projects such as railways, pipelines, ports, and so on, to allow the next few years to direct deliveries of oil and gas from the West, promising markets in the south and east. It is also important to see the prospects together with the oil and gas companies. Outline plans for expanding export infrastructure to countries of Africa, Latin America, and the Asia Pacific.
So that's Russian President Vladimir Putin. Professor McCoy. You can talk what role China can play specifically, and what you think the West is doing wrong and right.
What the United States is doing wrong, right? The outset. The Biden administration's response became clear last year. That Russia was doing invasion in Ukraine again by November. As we know, there were no intelligence reports that Russia was massive on the border, their expectations of invasion. So the initial response was a diplomatic one to drive a wedge between China and Russia. Feeling that would isolate and diplomatically make it very difficult to invade. The United States made a serious calculation about the depth of the diplomatic bond between Xi Jinping, the President of China, and the Putin of Russia. The depth of the bonds is enormous. The start of the Winter Olympics came to Beijing. They released a 5,300-word state declaration of a de facto alliance. Saying that there were no limits, no secrets, that this was a complete diplomatic commitment. So that failed, right at the outset. In December, Washington had a dozen contacts with China, trying to break alliance, trying to get China pressure on Russia. And throughout, how badly it's going, no matter how damaged Ukraine. And Ukraine is actually its number one priority, China. China has some investments in Ukraine. China has been quiet about the war and has been generally supportive of Russia. So that didn't work. The next thing, led by what I tried, was massive sanctions against Russia. The Biden administration's program to collapse the Russian economy by 15%. To cut it off from the supply chain and to plunge it into a serious recession. And that may yet happen. But it's going to take a long time for an economy as large as Russia's to be impacted by sanctions. So over the immediate term, that isn't working, right? Now, you read me, played state about seeking new markets for Russia's energy exports. Railway lines about shipping gas and oil. And Europe is also talking about cutting off oil, right? So, as I said, oil is a fungible move from Russia. Russia can simply stop shipping oil to Europe, pipeline to China, send it to the global market anywhere, wide world. But that's true gas. Russia does not have.
We have less than a minute, Professor McCoy.
Russia doesn't have LPG. It takes about four years to build a terminal to convert gas into liquid for ocean going traders. Right? So that would take a minimum of four years and many billion dollars from the terminal. And the violence against the Russian security is so massive that it has nowhere else to go. So basically, it's a bluffing. Okay. I think he's trying to block the threat of embargo or something like I'm proposing. This very simple solution of finding Russia 20% of its Russian national gas exports to Europe in order to fund the region of Ukraine, punish Putin, hopefully bring a clear end to this war.
Well, we want to thank you for your analysis, Professor Wisconsin Madison's recent government world order and catastrophic change will link to your peace and dispatch. How to end the war in Ukraine, the solution beyond sanctions. Democracy Now has a media producer. Visit democracynow.org to find out more. I'm Amy Goodwin. Stay safe.
Specifically, Hagerstown, Maryland, and a couple days and came behind have been at their house, and I've heard them term that's sort of baffling in the term is wet up. This one was today on my one of my friends left and went to the store and I'm gone. I just said, okay, I didn't retina up. And I later came talking to her, and apparently she retina up in our area of this something. And that was in Cumberland. And in Hagerstown, I was with a friend, and her son was behaving around her room, so retina up. I've never heard that term in my life.
I'm fascinated that you were using this version of it, because usually what we see is red up, and it's R-E-D-D for the most part, but sometimes it doesn't end there, but it's a very red up, and the word red is actually still used in Scotland, Northern Ireland, in that sense, tightening up. And what's really cool is that term came over across the Atlantic to this country, with a lot